painting to photography, from beadwork to woodworking. KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University presents Artbeat. Artbeat highlights the work and accomplishments of local artists from in and around Winona. Support for Artbeat is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Now, here's Terry Tenseth with today's Artbeat.
Today on Artbeat, we will discuss the documentary Attempting the Northwest Passage. In August 2014, Hywel Taff Roberts and his shipmates attempted to sail from Pond Inlet, Baffin Island, in the Canadian Arctic to Nome, Alaska. Learn how you can view the film in progress at this year's Frozen River Film Festival, and find out how two creative minds are hard at work making this documentary happen. I'm Terry Tenseth, and you're listening to Artbeat. Good afternoon. You're listening to Artbeat. I'm Terry Tenseth.
I'm Robert Peck.
And today in studio, we have two special guests that are working on a documentary together about sailing. And we're going to get right into it. Go ahead and introduce yourself so everybody gets used to your voice.
Taff Roberts. I've been in Winona for 24 years. And my wife, Ann Plummer, she works in the art department at Winona State.
And I'm Harry Klein. I'm one of the other filmmakers on the project. And you can shoot away.
Okay, great. So you decided to sail the Northwest Passage.
Yes.
And you said, I'm going to take a camera along with me and film this endeavor. Why?
Well, I was not going to take a camera initially, and then I thought it was a good opportunity to take some shots along the way. And I backed out of it because I thought it was going to be too much work to make a movie. And then people kept on saying, well, we'd like you to make a movie, and here's some money to help you. And then the ball started rolling, and next thing you know, I have an editor sitting next to me here, a professional editor, actually.
I think throwing money is pretty good incentive.
I like that, yeah.
It helped.
Well, you're lucky that people were like, hey, we'll give you money just to do this. I mean, normally it's the other way around. People have to go and ask people for money once
kind of did a little bit of that.
Okay. All right.
I think that has something to say about the people, the arts community here in Winona, that they're willing to support a lot of things. And this guy knows a lot of people in town.
Yeah. Yeah, you are kind of Mr. Popular, Taff.
He is.
Whether you know that or not.
Well, it's a small town, and I work all over town, and I get to meet people, and I like people. And this movie, let me tell you right now, the reason why I wanted to make the movie wasn't so much for me. Honest to God, it was for the people that's going to watch it. And it was a hell of a lot of work. And I would like to inspire people when they see this movie and say, you know what, this is amazing. I want to see that. I want to go somewhere that I want to go.
You know, just a testament to that, Taff's been doing some other speaking around town, and he just recently spoke at the Minnesota Arts Museum.
Yeah, to a standing room only crowd.
It was a standing room only crowd, and because there were so many extra people, they had to add an extra date. So that tells you that a lot of people are interested in this.
Yeah. Oh, people are pretty interested in your unique storytelling abilities and your adventures in life. And sailing is one of those grand adventures for you. What draws you to that?
Well, the first time I got on a sailboat, I was 22 years of age, and I just came out of the Royal Air Force, and I was I'd been living in Gibraltar in Spain. And I crossed the Atlantic with a couple of people on a very small sailboat from Tangier to Barbados. And that was my first time at sea. And I really got hooked. And but the Arctic is somewhere that I've always been intrigued by. I've been intrigued by the culture, by the scenery, by the history, and just the absolute sheer beauty. And I got to see quite a bit of that this summer. And I really want to share this with people. I want to get people off their ass and say, listen, let's go. Let's go look for some of this stuff.
Now, sailing somewhere like the Northwest Passage, is that dangerous?
Well, as I said to somebody the other day, if you take the fear chip out, it doesn't seem that way. But if you leave that in, then, yeah, well, we could have all drowned, absolutely. But you could die crossing Broadway in the dark night.
I think the things I'm seeing on the video is you realize the extremes that they really had to put up with. It's not only just the big, broad waters that they had to cross, the cold waters, the wind, the snow, the polar bears. I mean, there's so much up there that people just don't realize you are just at the end of the extreme of human condition. And, you know, you could very easily perish. And matter of fact, one of the places that they visited was this Franklin expedition. And Taff, why don't you tell them a little bit about that?
Well, there was an expedition in 1845 sent by the Admiralty from Britain to seek to find the Northwest Passage and to chart it and to make it a passage for commerce to go from Europe over to China. And Sir John Franklin with Francis Crozier was one of his was the captain of one of the ships, HMS Erebus and HMS Terror. And they set off 300 men. I'm sorry. 130 men set off. They left in May of 1845, and they got locked into the ice in late September of that same year, and they got stuck in Terror and Rubus Bay, and they all disappeared. The first person who perished was on Beachy Island, where Erebus and Terror Bay. We actually sailed in there on August the 22nd, I think it was. We sailed in there, and that's where there's a gravestone for five of those mariners that passed away. And I've always wanted to sing a song for one of those mariners, John Torrington, who was a young lad of 20. He was plucked off the dockside in London and put on the ship, and he died on January 1st, 1846. And I learned a song 40 years ago about this expedition, and I've always wanted to sing that song at John's gravesite. Don't ask me why. And I cannot believe 40 years later I get the opportunity to sing. It was hauntingly, spiritually beautiful for me. It was something I've always wanted to do, and it was, I'll never forget it.
And we have that recording.
It's going to be in the movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And we're going to.
I think what's interesting about this, too, is we have a local musician that's actually going to produce a little score for us, Eric Hokeshoven. And he said that when he heard Taft's song, he looked it up on Google. And it's actually, I guess, a quite familiar thing. Even Sinead O'Connor has done a cover it. And I guess it's just beautiful. So you'll have to check that out.
Bob Dylan actually sang it too once.
So Betsy Neal, I'm sure most of you know her. She teaches in the school. And she's going to now play the fiddle for me. And I'm going to try and sing a song called Lady Franklin's Lament. And it was a lament written for Lord Franklin, the guy and his people who lost here. And don't ask me why, but Betsy? I've always wanted to... She said it's better to clap before, right? Well, if you like it, you can clap afterwards. So why did I want to sing this song at this gravestone of one of the first mariner who died? His name was John Torrington, and he died on January 1st, 1846, the first day of the year. He was 20 years of age. He was a petty officer, and he was a boiler. He worked the boilers on the ship. And I don't ask me, 40 years ago when I first came to America, somebody taught me this song, and I've always... Don't ask me why I wanted to sing it at his gravesite. And God forbid I got the chance to do that. And if you come to the movie, you'll get to see me singing it at the gravesite.
We were homeward bound on the deep one night. Lying in my hammock, I fell asleep. I dreamt a dream and I thought it true, concerning Franklin and his gallant crew. With 100 sailors he sailed away to the frozen ocean in the month of May, to seek a passage around the pole, to where we seamen do often roam. Through poor misfortune we vainly strove, our ships on mountains of ice did roll, and the Eskimo in his skin canoe was the only one that could ever get through. Baffin's Bay, where the whale fish blows, the fate of Franklin no man may know. The fate of Franklin no man can tell. Lord Franklin along with his sailors do dwell. And now my burden, it gives me pain. My long lost Franklin, I'd crossed the main. 10,000 pounds I would freely give to say on earth that my Franklin do live.
We kind of talked about this a little bit earlier at the art museum. This is not a trip that you did on a whim. This is something that you've been thinking about doing for a long part, part of your life. What is it like to be actually doing something now that you've been wanting to do for so long?
Gratifying. It's very gratifying to actually be doing it, and it's following your passion. You're following your dream, and this is absolutely. I didn't think I'd ever end up there, but I was very lucky to know somebody who had a boat who actually even asked me if I'd wanted to go. And it's a long way to go. There's a lot of hoops you have to jump through before you get there. And, you know, there's no police up there. There's no fire chiefs up there. There's nothing. I mean, you're by yourself up there. And now and again, we'd see a Canadian Coast Guard aeroplane flying over above, and they were checking up on us. But other than that, there's nobody to look after you.
If you see the video, you just realize how desolate it is. I mean, they have these big islands, and they go into these coves to avoid the bad weather. And here's this beat up old shack on the harbor on the shore, and it's just an old Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and they're deserted. No one's there anymore.
Yeah, they set those up in the 30s and 40s to try and hold sovereignty up in the Arctic, the Canadians, because. They wanted to kick out the Brits who were whaling up there, and they wanted to keep it for themselves. Move people from certain places in Canada up to the high Arctic to try and establish sovereignty up there. But it didn't work. In the late 50s and 60s, those Royal Canadian Mounted Police stations actually were deserted. They left. And that's how we saw them. They looked.
Well, you should tell them, too. I mean, there are a couple of these places. Didn't you say that the Mounted Police who stationed them there, they committed suicide?
Well, no, one of them did. In Dundas Harbor, which was one of the first places we stopped on Somerset Island, we pulled in there and we walked over a mountain. By the way, that's where we saw our first polar bear. We walked up to the RCMP station. And there's a very small cemetery up on the rocks there, and it's probably about 12 feet by 12 feet, and there are two people buried there. And one of them was a young man, I believe he died in 1926, and he actually, he killed himself.
But didn't you say they had to stay 2 years?
He had to stay there 2 years, and the story goes that the second guy that was his friend that was there, he actually shot himself also, but it wasn't intentional. It was in a hunting accident, I think.
Yeah, it's either that or get eaten by the polar bear, right?
Eat or be eaten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to go back a little bit about where did I get this whole idea from, I went to school in Ysgol Agadir Dogellau in Wales, and I spoke nothing but, well, actually, I was just speaking English at the time because I didn't speak English till I was 11. And in the library there, I started reading some of these books about travel and the Northwest Passage, and it immediately grabbed me. And most young men and men at the time were more interested in climbing Everest. That was everybody's goal, but mine was something different.
Now, with the two of you, Taff, you're a very good and excellent, I may say, storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry, we've worked in the past. What's it like working together, having your stories, being able to show your story in addition to telling it? How does having such a good storyteller help you in the editing process?
Well, Taff is...
Oh, boy. I got to say, you know what's going to happen. I'm going to predict this right now, that this is Taff's first time filming.
It is.
And that it's a different medium.
It's been a little difficult, I got to say, going through some of the footage, because it's not as smooth as I would like it. But Taff had a good eye for what was interesting. To be honest, a couple of the more frustrating things are I don't have any video of the better stories he tells. And that was... That's something. Like he tells about a couple. He would meet boats all along the trip. I thought it was interesting. Not a lot of boats, but the same ones that go from cove to cove because of the weather. And they got to be pretty good friends with him. And this one couple, what did he call them? A hippie couple?
Yeah, the hippie couple and the Canadian couple.
They went on. If you find, if you watch the film, you'll find that they had Taft's boat had to make a decision whether to turn back or not because the ice was horrible this year. There were two boats that went on, and this other boat kind of went in a different direction, and they actually got froze. And they got frozen in, iced in, I guess it'd be. And Taff told me, which I didn't realize until I went to the art museum speech, I had heard that the ice had literally brought the boat up out of the water. It had literally lifted it and tilted it over. And when they were sending SOSs out, they were really worried, as they should be, but polar bears. And I never heard this, but Taft mentioned that they were attacked by a polar bear. They tried to get in on the sailboat. Can you imagine the horror up there? You're just like hundreds of miles from anybody without any help. And you got this huge, 1,000-pound animal trying to climb its way in.
You know, and unfortunately for me, I think of polar bears as cute and cuddly because I've never come in contact with one. And Taft, you're shaking your head right now.
I was not prepared. They are actually about 11 feet tall. They travel at 35 knots an hour, 35 miles an hour, and they do stalk humans. And shockingly, they can swim at 6 knots. It's about the speed that we traveled. And in the movie, you'll see a picture of one swimming right next to the boat.
Yeah, they're just huge. One of the zoo in St. Paul, they have a polar bear exhibit. And they have a big glass wall, and you can see this polar bear swimming right next to you on the wall. And he always pushes his paw up against the glass. And if you have your hand there and this huge, massive paw just swallows it, just the paw. So that just gives you a good feeling how huge and large these animals are. So I can't imagine having one try to get at you in the boat.
Yeah, that's frightening. It's like canned meat at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and who responded? Tell them who responded to the SOS.
As far as I know, I wasn't there, but as far as I know, it was a Russian icebreaker. What? What the hell are the Russians doing there? Well, believe it or not, if you look down at the top of the world rather than from the side of the world, and not at the front of an American-made atlas, guess what? They're up there too, and the Chinese.
That makes sense.
It does.
Yeah.
And the Americans too, they're up there. But one thing I wanted to say as far as how did Harry and I... How are we working together on this movie? Well, the truth of it is I'm working with a very professional cinematographer and a photographer, and I'm not. I'm an amateur. So I went there cold with all this really fancy camera equipment that luckily was bought for us. And Harry's the one that chose all the cameras and everything. And I went up there and I did the best I could. And of course, when I got back, it wasn't the kind of quality stuff that Harry's used to. So he's having to kind of fix it up a little bit.
Well, fortunately, he took a lot of good photos along with some of the other boats were allowed to use their photos as well. So I was able to put in photos where I didn't have video. And it makes a big difference. So I don't want to come down on Taff. He did a good job filming, especially for someone who hasn't done it before.
Well, and let's just put it out there that you're on a boat.
Yeah, I know.
And boats move.
That's what he kept saying to me. Harry, it was going up and down.
Yeah.
I mean, guess what? I mean, it's Harry said, there's too much shaking in this one. I said, Harry, guess what? There wasn't one moment the boat was still.
No. And, you know, I've heard stories from editors that work on The Deadliest Catch. I've actually talked with a couple of them.
You have?
Yes. And it's just, you know, some of the software they have is quite amazing that they have access to.
Yes.
And you're talking to guys that are used to shooting in conditions that are just horrific on a regular basis.
Well, I was just glad that we chose a camera that is weather resistant. And I was actually worried more about the water. But to be honest with you, the cold really can affect a camera too.
Oh, yeah.
And in the boat, in the video, I keep constantly seeing people wipe the ceiling, the windows. So I guess there was a lot of
condensation
going on. Well, so it was probably a really good
idea.
We
had an issue in our boat. And for next year, when we go, that's going to change. We had a lot of condensation coming in up from the galley and everything else. And it's just, we need a better circulation in the cabin. They're working on that this summer, actually in Lewisport, where the boat is right now.
Well, we had even gotten a drone. Wouldn't it have been cool to get these shots? We're picturing, let's have this drone go right over the polar bear and blah, blah, blah. I guess I didn't realize that there are spots up there you really can't take a drone.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah, they just, what is it, this satellite signal, I guess?
There's a zone called the ADIZ zone, which is the Aeronautical Defense Identification Zone. I'm not sure about this, but we were warned that possibly before we took the drone up there that it wouldn't work in that area. And possibly one of the things we're thinking is that there wasn't satellite coverage in there, and the drone needed the satellite coverage in able to maneuver, because we unfortunately the drone was paid for by a very, very giving family from Winona, and the drone crash landed a couple of times, and we did repair it, and we tried again, and it wouldn't work. So we brought the drone back to Winona and passed it on to the family, and they're going to use it as a family to make movies.
That's great. No, I heard a lot of people talking about the drone that you were taking along.
I would love to have had it, but they said...
It happens.
The video, I'm watching the video, the first thing happened, it goes up about 10 feet, and then it's gone, right down the beach and crashes. So you could just tell they didn't have any control.
Well, first time it went against the hotel in Pond Inlet where we were staying, and I actually have the footage of it going against the hotel.
Yeah, they just said Americans.
Right? Bloody Americans.
Your technology.
Well, one of the other things I want to bring up is the fact is, as an amateur movie maker up there, you know, I interviewed the mayor of Pond Inlet, which we got it in the movie.
Yeah,
but I just want to say that it was kind of difficult to interview people up there, because when they realized that I was American, well, I'm Welsh American,
right.
But anyway, and then I had a camera. The first thing that came to their mind was Greenpeace, and they didn't want to have anything to do with it, because the Greenpeace has, curtail them in some of their hunting habits. But Greenpeace is the agency right now that's helping them with a mine in Pond Inlet, the St. Mary's River's mine. The Greenpeace are on the same page with them and trying to help them trying to stop that from going any further than it is.
I think that's what's kind of funny, too. When you see these little hamlets that are up there, except that these little towns are, they look so poor. You don't even know how people could survive. Here we talked about they're in an environment of an extreme, and you look at these shacks and you go, how do people live up there? That is just crazy.
When we flew into Pond Inlet, it's right out on the top of Baffin Island, very, very small place, 1,500 people. And the average age in Pond Inlet is 19 years of age. That's it.
Well, didn't you say too, because your sunlight goes so long that they're like 10, 12 o'clock, these kids are playing outside?
Well, it's daylight all day and all night long from May 6th, I believe, to August 6th, I think. And during that time, we were staying in a hotel, and the kids were out playing all night long. I assumed that they were sleeping during the day. I didn't see them, but probably so.
Now, we were talking about this beautiful desolation that you're surrounded by, right? So you have to prepare for that and have your supplies ready, right? Because there's no stop and go that you can pull the boat up next to and get additional items if you needed.
Right. So we had plenty of dried food. We had rice, we had oatmeal, beans, and a lot of frozen meats for people who ate it. I didn't.
But did you tell them you were a vegetarian?
I was a vegetarian until I started tasting the seal meat. And I really, really enjoyed eating the seal meat.
What's it comparable to?
Well, I've been very intrigued, and that's the reason why I partook in it, because I've always been interested, because seal meat is one meat that has vitamin C in it. And there are no lemon trees or lime trees or anything up in the Arctic, so it makes it so people can live up there. And this is where most of the Inuits get their nutrition, is from the seal. So what does it taste like? It tasted rich. It was beautiful texture. It had a wonderful after fishy, kind of a fishy taste, Well, more like a squid taste, I'd say. But it was not anything like, it looked like beef, dark, but it didn't taste anything like, obviously, beef. But it was one of the my favorite things I've ever eaten, actually. I really enjoyed it.
It's kind of funny when they picked it up. I had to actually put this in. Taff, I didn't have to put it in originally, but Taff said, you got to put that in. It's when the captain, they got some seal in town. So what do I picture in seal? Well, they get it in a little bag. It's wrapped up in this.
Oh, yeah. You're thinking like at the grocery store. Yeah. Beep.
Yeah. You can check out. Here's your seal. Yeah, just pass it into the scanner. Exactly. No. It's meat on the bone. And the shot is of the captain. He's on the floor of the deck outside cutting pieces off that they're going to skillet and fry up. It just looks, Taft, that looks pretty gross, but that's how it was.
Thank you for putting it in. I really appreciate it.
So when you two are working right now, but I assume that you as the editor, you get to mm-hmm. call most of the, or some of the shots, or you call
We go back Taft, and forth.
Right. And play editor and director.
Yeah, actually we just, I showed him one of the latest cuts last night. We were going over some things, and he likes, again, where I, as much as I can, I try and put photos in. So I had more new photos. I had some credits to show him while we're trying to do it. I'm opening it up a little bit differently. And more or less, we like the changes. And, you know, here we are, what, 2.5, almost 3 weeks before the festival starts.
3 weeks!
we have to redo some voiceover yet, do a couple on cameras, because, you know, just... It's the flow. As an editor, I want this thing to flow. I want people to watch and go from A to B to C. And there's just a couple of spots that, well, you know, how do we get there? How did the boat go? So we're going to probably end up doing that this weekend and, you know, finishing it up. But it's amazing. You think you've got all this time and...
No, you don't.
No.
And speaking of which, you're going to be at Frozen River Film Festival. You're going to show it as a work in progress, I mm-hmm. believe, correct?
That's correct. And I think, would you say Sunday at 10 o'clock? Sunday 2
no,
o'clock.
No, they changed it. And if you look in your booklet, it says Sunday the 22nd of February at 10 o'clock. It's not true. They've just changed it to 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, February the 22nd. So all our sponsors can be there, and we hope. And we thank our sponsors very, very much for all their very kind donations. And yes, all the names, anybody that donated anything, helped out in making this movie or would like to help out make this movie, please contact us.
Actually, why don't you give me your blog?
I will give the blog.
Because that was interesting. He kept track of what he did on the trip. And as they were actually doing it, they had a laptop and all that other stuff. So we were able to get through the satellite. And why don't you tell them what it is?
If you want to get more idea what happened on the trip and, well, most of the things that happened, you can go to the blog. And it's blogmailasail.com/CATRYN.
Gotcha.
So maybe you can put that on a website or something if people ask. That'd be great. But it's nice. He had photos and his description of the trip.
I know that Robert and I are both interested. What's the projected... timeline for final release?
Well, I guess it'd be depending when they go on the trip again, because I hate to spoil it, but there's some things they didn't accomplish up there, and you'll find that when you go through the film. But
that makes it more interesting anyhow.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I think they found out too, there's quite a number of things they would do different next time. Yeah, he's shaking. It's tripod. It's
no,
Ben,
we would
there.
Do something.
Ben there, Taff. It's okay.
We would do some things differently. And yes, we did not complete the trip. We were trying to get through to Nome, Alaska, and we were turned around at Leopold Island. And if you come and watch the movie, you'll know why, and you'll see why. But we hope to this year, this summer, go back. The boat is in Lewisport, Newfoundland, and it's in bed right now, getting some work done on it. And we hope this summer, around August 1st, well, actually before then, we'll head up north and try and do it again if it works. But we have to, first of all, look at all the Canadian reports. Well, not all the Canadian reports, but all the ice reports that are coming out of the Arctic and how much the ice is melting. Usually you can't get in until August 1st. This year was more ice than anybody has seen in a long time.
Isn't that such a gamble? Isn't that crazy to think that you would actually stay? I mean, if you got stuck in there, like that one couple, if you got stuck in the ice, you'd literally be there 6 to 8 months. 6 to 8 months of fuel to keep you warm. 6 to 8 months of food.
And seeing the same person.
Yeah.
And nobody else, pretty much.
That's the polar bears. Yeah.
That's why we didn't stay for the winter. Yeah. Oh, yes.
You don't want the polar bears to start looking good.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean? Like,
are you going to try to start where you left off for this part of the trip, or do you have to kind of basically start from the beginning?
Well, the boat is in Newfoundland right now, and basically what we were thought was going to happen this year, we were going to just go straight through. But we were waiting for the ice to melt. So next year, we're probably going to leave this year, sorry, 2015. This year, what we'll try and do is if the ice conditions are right, we'll leave a little later, maybe a week later. I don't know what the captain's going to do. I'm just thinking that maybe the 7th or 10th of August and just going right through and hoping it'll be ice free.
I think if you look at the video, what was really hard as an editor is, you know, Taff had mentioned there's all these ice. And then I'd look at the first shots and go, there's hardly any ice. You know, the boat, the water's clear. But then I heard that literally within a couple hours, as in that other boat that got frozen in, this ice would just like, he described it like magic. Isn't it like a magic trick?
He said you'd be sailing down Lancaster Sound and it was ice free. And within 4 to 5 hours, you'd be absolutely surrounded by ice. And before that happened, what you'd have to try and do is to try and find an inlet to somewhere you can pull into and get around a lead in the ice, like a road in the ice, to try and get to it. And it was quite dodgy a lot of the times. But I guess the ice turns up by the tide, by the currents, by the wind, and it all brings it. And then sometimes 5 or 6 hours later, pew, it's gone. It just comes and goes, and it can get really intense.
Well, besides the ice, I mean, here they are in an island, and this is actually one of the better parts of the movie, too. It gives you an impression of what it's like in the boat when they're in a harbor. It's got mountains on all sides, and what are they called?
Willy Wars?
Yeah, you know, these winds would whip down, and here it's like 30 to 50 mile an hour winds, and this boat is going 45 degrees, bopping up and down. I mean, how scary was that?
That's life at sea, boyo.
Didn't you say that one? How long did that last?
Well, that storm, I'm going to make sure I get this right. It started, I believe, on a Wednesday morning, and I think we were still in it until Friday morning. It was about 48 hours, and it was a wicked gale. Blew up to 50 knots, and it was pretty shaky. And actually, and I would say that all the crew would say this, that probably was, if we were going to lose the boat, it was going to be that second night. And there was a polar bear on the shore and had been there for 2 days waiting for us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, just licking waiting.
Honest to God, it was not more than, I would say it was not more than 400 to 500 feet away.
I have a new idea of what polar bears are like. It's not the friendly, cute version anymore.
Oh. No, Mom. No.
But that's probably a pretty intense part of the of the film, just showing that, and you're seeing the things move, and you go, wow. And I don't actually, people realize when they're watching that, everybody on board has their safety suits on. What did you just tell me the other day? Those things, if you go in the water, they...
Well, it's a personal flotation device, and each one of them has had one, and they're quite expensive, and when you see it in the film, that was a drill we did. And we all had one on. And if the boat goes down, that's the first thing you do is you get into that suit and you zip it up, and you got to whistle bells and whistles and everything else, and it's and chocolate bars in the pockets and stuff like that.
It's a survival gear, yeah.
But you should be okay in it for 48 hours, maybe.
In the water?
In the water, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But if they're wearing
the neoprene.
If they're wearing that during the storm, I mean, I guess... Tells you right there, they had some worries about it.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's pretty.
And we had those in barrels outside, and we had emergency, the captain of this boat, I've been on expeditions with him before, and his safety level is the best, and that's one of the reasons I go with him. And on the stern of the boat, there were barrels, plastic barrels, and we had those with all our emergency food, emergency clothes. If the boat went down, we'd throw the barrels in the ocean, and then we would put our suits on. Well, we put our suits on first, then throw the barrels out, hopefully. And then we get our a lifeboat, the little lifeboat we had, and we jump into that and then go to the next step.
You know, kind of a, going back a little bit too, with the polar bears, even though you might not have seen them on the island directly because they go in and out of these coves and they have some time, but you didn't go anywhere without a gun, right?
No, we did not go anywhere. You couldn't go out without a gun because, you know, when a bear can travel at 35 miles an hour. Whew.
Now, I'm guessing it is legal to shoot them where you were at.
Well, if they're coming for you, yeah. I guess it must be legal.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
With either the stun gun, you know.
It doesn't have quite the reach that you need.
Pepper spray.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Well, I asked him actually that. What, do you have bear spray? They must have bear spray, but.
Well, actually, I looked into that as a possibly because I like to birdwatch, and I thought I'd have something like that in my back pocket. But I don't believe it's legal in Canada because I looked for it in some of the supply shops, and I couldn't find it.
Huh. My understanding is bear spray has been proven not to be effective anyway.
Really? I don't want to test it.
Yeah,
so,
that's it.
You know.
You go out, Robert, and... Well,
I've read stories of the use of bear spray that didn't turn out the greatest.
Great. Oh, boy.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, it is.
But, yeah, don't look them in the eyes. That's what I was told.
Well, they're taller than you, too.
I know.
Now, when we were talking, when you were at the Marine Art Museum, you were talking about how big some of these ice chunks were, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, can you give us an idea of...
Well, I believe we looked at a radar one night coming down the coast of Baffin Island, and I swear we saw an iceberg that probably was about 8 to 10 miles long. Long, like an island. How tall was it? It looked like the White Cliffs of Dover. And it from far away, we figured it probably was 300 or 400 feet.
Wow. You know, I got a picture. You got a picture of that. Somebody did.
No, it's in all that stuff I gave you. You just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I don't look.
Oh man, yeah. Speaking of which, how many hours of footage are we talking here?
Oh my God. Well, you know, I did tell him, you know, don't leave it running. You know, just take about 1 or 2 minutes. So it sounds like there's an awful lot of footage, and there's a lot, but it's little clips of footage. So maybe 5, 6 hours.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's not horrible. It's just a lot to go through, and then you got all these photos, but. It's just amazing. You look at some of this stuff and go, I don't know if actually I would. I think it'd be awesome to go there.
Right.
I'd like to see that. Trying to convince him. I'll go next time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would like to thank over the air Matt Jensen Young, who was an Australian on another boat called Drina. And he's an ice expert and from Australia. And he lives in Kingston, Rhode Island right now. But anyway, he was very helpful to us in helping us out with ice charts and things like that. Not only that, he helped us make this movie because of the photographs he helped contribute to making this movie. And thank you, Matt. And we hope that he can make it here for the Frozen River Film Festival.
I thought it was funny, too, the boats that they kept traveling along with. Well, one guy was from, this group was from Australia, of all places, Australia.
The boat was from Australia.
That's just crazy. And then where was that cowboy from? That's
the guy.
Oh, he was from Australia?
Yeah, Mike. Actually, he was born in Papua New Guinea, and he was a 74... year old leathery faced cowboy from Australia. He was quite a guy.
And then you had a couple from Wales.
And there was a couple from British, well, he was from British Columbia and his wife was from Wales. And they just spent a whole year in Wales spending time with her family. They had gone down from British Columbia through the Panama Canal. And now they're on their way, this last summer, they were on their way home to British Columbia via the Northwest Passage. Most of us were doing this trip to prove something. No. But they were doing it because it was the shortest way home. It was shorter than going through the Panama Canal. And boy, they were a great couple. And Lee had built the boat himself out of military parts that he'd found behind his father's base in British Columbia 20, 30 years ago. And he realized it was good metal and he built a boat and it's a great looking vessel.
Bear resistant.
What are the biggest things that you two have learned from each other throughout this process?
Do you want to go first?
No, go ahead.
One of the things I'm learning mostly is, you know, you say, well, something's a lot of work. Well, I'll tell you what, try making a movie sometime. You think you have it, and then all of a sudden, I don't like that. And everything changes, and then you have to change this and change that. I'm not complaining. I mean, I'm really enjoying it. And I wanted this to be the best, you know, as good a movie as we can make. But working with Harry is such a joy because he knows all this stuff. He knows what he's doing. And he takes it home and he changes things around and he comes back and I say, wow, how did you do that? But it's an absolute wonderful opportunity to be next to you, Harry, working on this.
Well, it's been a good experience. Staff is a good storyteller. He's gotten a lot of... And actually, I think some of the things that I enjoy seeing most of the stories is just a lockdown, a shot of something like one of the other crew members. She talks about when they went on a hike. And there, here they are. They went at the top of the mountain, and they looked down. Hey, give me your binoculars. They look down there, and what do they see? Another polar bear. Dang polar bears. They're everywhere. And, you know, what are they going to do? They're at the top of the mountain, and there's a polar bear at the top, at the bottom. And I don't know if the polar bear saw them or it's coming towards them. They don't know, but they got to hike down and get to the boat. They can't be stuck up there alone. And it's just interesting to hear her tell that story in her British accent and talking about how she left. She was eating a chocolate bar and came with binoculars
and she dropped it on the floor.
Yeah, it's Monty Python. But it's just a very funny story coming from somebody like that.
Right. So you're learning a lot from each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very much so.
Do you have a total running time that you're expecting the film to be?
I think it'd just be a little over 30 minutes. It's a good time. It goes at a route at a quick pace. I think you'll see a lot of... I try to keep things moving and interesting, and you do. They just went to a lot of different locations. The thing I'm finding out most right now that I need to probably work on is, are people understanding how far they went and where they are? So I think I might have to introduce a couple more maps, because I don't know. I've never been up to the Arctic. I don't know that area. It's just... And this beachy island that they went to for... That gravesite song, it is just this tiny little dot on a map. I've tried to call it up. If you Google it, and I did find one, but you know, here's the map. There's a big arrow, and you see this little dot, and that's Beachy Island. It's like, well, I don't know if I can use that. It's just too tiny.
You might have to make your own graphic there, Harry. You might have to. Yeah. Well, we appreciate you both coming in. Is there anything you haven't had a chance to say, or Robert, is there anything else you want to ask?
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it, and thanks for coming and sharing your stories.
Yeah, and hopefully you'll keep doing this, Taff, even after this project's done.
What'd you tell them what you next would like to do?
Yeah, I suppose I should, but first of all, I want to thank you for inviting us down here.
I bet.
And I want to thank the sponsors, because as I mentioned at the Maritime Museum the other day, this is a local film. It's part of the cultural explosion that's going on in this small little town on the shore of the Mississippi River right now. It is it's amazing what's going on here. And this is another part of that whole movement. And this is all locally paid for. What am I going to do next? Oh, yeah, that other film?
Yeah, he says, well, I got another project for you, Harry.
Well, actually, just to let you know that the first time I met Harry, actually, was making a movie. Rockwell Kent, the artist, came here 100 years ago, and we decided we wanted to make a movie. And one day, Harry Klein came down and made the movie for us. It's an absolute beautiful film, and you can find it at the Historical Society if you want to go down and take a look at it. Harry did a great job. So I had no intention of making this movie, but there's another movie I've wanted to make for probably at least 8 to 10 years, and it's something I want to give the country of my birth, where I came from. And it's making a movie on the language that I was taught when I grew up, and it's the Welsh language. And this is the movie that I want to make. And it's a movie about the Welsh language and how it's been challenged by the neighbors, the Saxons, for 1,600 years. They've tried to kill it. They're trying to get rid of it. We still have it. The culture is still there. And as far as we can tell, there are about 700,000 people in Wales today that live and work and go to church in the language that they were given. And this is just going to be on the language, not the culture of Wales, but I want to try and feature how languages are important to cultures, to countries, or whatever. And once you lose that language, it kind of all goes downhill. And I would like to have this as a feature at the Frozen River Film Festival, because I think it belongs there.
Yeah, there's actually a couple scenes I didn't put in the movie, you know, and just trying to keep the pacing good. But, you know, Di and his brother, Di is the captain, and his brother Pete, and of course Taff, they all are from Wales, they'd speak Welsh. So here's a couple where they're going over the charts and they're speaking Welsh to each other. It's really pretty cool. And then there was a point on the beach where they were at with one of the other boats, and they get out a songbook, you know, they made a little fire, and they're just probably happy to be off the water, the bouncing water, and they're singing Welsh songs. And it's interesting. It's cool. And I think the Welsh project would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, most of them, actually quite a few of them were hymns that we were taught when we were kids. But so look out for this movie. I would say Harry and I are going to go over to Wales in the next 2 years. Well, hopefully we'll be going over there 2 or 3 times and getting ready to make this movie. And I would say look out for it in 2 to 4 years or something like that.
That's good.
Great. Sounds good.
Thank you to you both for coming in.
You bet. Thank you.
Thanks again to Hywell Taft Roberts and to Harry Klein for visiting with us today on Art Beat. More information on Sailing the Northwest Passage can be obtained by contacting Hywell Taft Roberts at troberts@hbci.com. I'm Terry Tunsett, and you've been listening to Art Beat.
Art Beat is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. Visit us on the web at kqal.org.